the purpose of a sacrifice. The weather on the day when the students met the Keeper of Knowledge was fresh and pleasant. It had recently rained, and everything around was covered with tiny diamond droplets. Though the gentle sun had already dried the rows of white benches arranged along the low, equally white stage, today it was easy and pleasant to breathe. In small groups, chatting among each other, the students gathered near the stage, taking their seats. Soon, the bright figure of the sage appeared from the landscape of the park. He radiated warmth and an invisible glow which could not be seen, but with fine tuning, one could feel and enjoy the incomparable scent of goodness. Greeting the disciples with a bright smile, the master swiftly ascended the stairs to the stage, setting an example for the disciples of never missing the opportunity to exert effort beyond necessity. Several eager hands shot up immediately. With a gesture, the Keeper of Knowledge pointed to a slender young man with deep cornflower blue eyes and a short light scar above his left eyebrow. His name was Erast. He was among the fortunate few whom the Keeper allowed to attend meetings regularly. And the Keeper found particular joy in observing how, with each meeting, his face brightened up, his gaze became wiser and more aware. The master noticed that new thoughts found reflection in the actions and spiritual practices of the diligent disciple.
"Dear Master,"
Erast began with a deep, well-modulated voice, indicating his professional vocal training.
"Recently, I read this quote. The invisible world is much closer than we think. It penetrates into our thoughts, emotions, and well-being. It governs everything that happens on Earth."
For a moment, Erast fell silent, as if once again pondering the words, then continued, looking hopefully at the master.
"What is this invisible world? Should we resist its influence on us?"
"The invisible world is the subtle plane where spirits, larvae, and angels dwell,"
softly spoke the Keeper of Knowledge.
"While in the physical body, we are like in a room without windows. We are blind and cannot see the subtle plane, but we can understand its actions."
"Master, may I suggest?"
The sage was addressed by an ascetic-looking woman of middle age with long, wheat-colored hair smoothly falling down on her back.
"Of course, Olivia,"
smiled the Keeper, sending the disciple a wave of confidence and power.
"We can feel the subtle plane through our thoughts and emotions if we control them, right? If we understand where they come from and what consequences they will have, correct?"
"Yes, that's correct. If we track our thoughts and feelings, carefully monitor them, analyze whether we need these thoughts, or if someone instilled them in us to lead us astray. If we can control our thoughts, filtering out the bad, and attracting, strengthening, cultivating the good within us, then we cease to be mere pawns in the hands of the invisible world. We ourselves begin to perceive things, accept some, and reject others."
"Dear Master, if everything in the world is arranged like this, then there must be some divine balance between good and evil on Earth?"
Olivia clarified.
"Should it be evenly distributed or not? And can people influence this balance?"
"Good and evil in our world are evenly distributed,"
calmly stated the Keeper of Knowledge, then pensively smiled and continued.
"But the concept of evenly is very conditional in our world. The scales constantly tip one way or the other. For example, in war, evil outweighs good by many times. Because there, people cultivate hatred, enmity. They kill and torment each other, driven by some abstract goals imposed on them by others. In war, the evil accounts for 90 or even 95%, while good amounts to only 10 or 5%.
"Master, but does it mean that even in war, there's a little good?"
Erast asked uncertainly.
"In war itself, there is nothing good. But fragments of good remain in people. There are many stories of someone being pulled out of burning houses, sharing the last piece of bread with others. That's precisely the manifestation of good. Even in the deepest and darkest darkness, there's a small drop of good.
Explained the sage.
Great master, but somewhere this balance must work in the opposite direction, so that there's 90% good and 10% evil?
Olivia asked again.
Yes, that's correct. Some people live well, develop spiritually, improve. For example, in ashrams, monasteries, there, good outweighs evil over many times, compared to other places. Because God has given these people the opportunity to develop, to overcome evil, with elevated, deep emotions. So it turns out that, seemingly on earth, there's an equal amount of good and evil. But in each specific case, this balance is disrupted. Somewhere there may be very little good, and somewhere much more.
It would be great to always be in a place where good is 90%.
Brightly smiled a young woman in a sky blue, floor-length dress. Mysteriously, a massive amulet brought from the place of power flickered on her chest.
It's entirely within our power, Margot,
replied the Keeper of Knowledge, spreading his arms wide as if embracing all the disciples at once.
Where there is more good and elevated emotions, that's where we should go. To be closer to God and the invisible world. To finally get out of our room without windows and see the world with an unclouded eye. But going to war is definitely not advisable.
Master, may I give an example?
Asked Arast, and upon receiving approval, continued.
Recently a classmate returned from the war. I looked at him and immediately understood how his soul suffered there. His gaze became like glass, faded, as if the person had already died. He left a piece of his soul in that hell.
I get goosebumps from such horrifying stories, and there are so many of them everywhere.
Shuddered Margot.
A very appropriate example, Arast, though very sad.
Sympathized the Keeper of Knowledge.
This is all a direct consequence of being constantly immersed in evil. When there is 90% evil around, you stop being a human, and the eyes become glassy because they do not want and cannot see the horror happening around.
Dear Master, may I ask, you always said that earthly life is hell. So, logically, it turns out that on earth there is more evil and negativity than good and peace?
Thoughtfully pronounced a handsome young man with almond-shaped brown eyes.
A very interesting question, Ruslan.
Smiled the Keeper of Knowledge.
Earth is indeed hell, but only in comparison to the subtle plane, where absolute good reigns. There are no wars, crimes, people with negative emotions, diseases, grief, old age, etc. There is none of the negative that exists in the physical world. But if we focus our attention exclusively on the physical plane, we will see that good and evil are equally present there. This is the balance of the universe. If there were more evil, there would simply be no life on earth. Therefore, even here in hell, the Almighty created a balance for life to thrive, for something to be created and built, for people to develop. Life is sustained by this balance. After bad times, good ones always come. After catastrophes and destruction comes calm, tranquility, and peace.
Master, I read that dinosaurs became extinct precisely because the balance was severely disrupted, and the Ice Age began,
said Olivia.
That's entirely possible,
replied the Keeper.
As soon as the balance is severely disrupted, various catastrophes occur. Earthquakes, floods, volcanic eruptions, sudden climate change.
Master, what then is our mission?
Asked Ruslan again, leaning forward with his growing interest.
I thought we should create good, increase it in the world, but still only 50% should remain?
We should always be on the side of good.
The master enthusiastically pronounced, directing rays of understanding, wisdom, and unconditional love to the disciples. Like sunlight, these rays spread around, filling the entire space. Like ripples on water, they spread with a warm wave from the stage to the disciples, giving them deep, elevated emotions.
What is good, in its essence,
continued the sage,
it is visible benefit to others. To make the foolish wise, the misguided see the truth, the lost find their way. That is the most important good. It's not enough to clothe and feed someone. If they remain foolish, soon they will lose everything you gave them.
This situation was with my cousin,
Ruslan said, sadly lowering his gaze.
He was very venturesome from childhood, and his parents encouraged it. They thought it would make him a champion, capable of overcoming obstacles and achieving any goals. But it turned out exactly the opposite. He became addicted to gambling, lost a car, an apartment, and all his parents' property in poker. He sighed, and for a while I tried to help him, gave him money to pay off his debts and start living normally. But now I understand it was pointless, because nothing changed in his mindset.
Noticing the disciple's sadness, the keeper of knowledge directed rays of understanding and acceptance towards him.
You're not to be blamed, Ruslan,
said the sage kindly.
But you really can't help fools with money or care. Until they change their mindset, nothing will change. True good is in helping a person change themselves to walk the true path. That is our main task on Earth.
Master, but many people are reluctant to become wise,
quietly said a plumpy brunette in a wide floral dress. She was visibly nervous before the question, rubbing now and then a red satin ribbon woven into her hair.
Yes, Mila, you're right,
the master encouraged the girl.
It's all because the media constantly tune people against spirituality. They scare them with sects so that people further deteriorate instead of developing and going towards God. And it has always been like this. For example, Osho was not allowed into any country. They expelled him from America so that he could not bring the truth to people. They didn't even allow him to spend the night at the airport. They were afraid he would spread knowledge, open people's eyes, and they would stop being obedient, passive sheep. They would start thinking for themselves and not listen to the government. As long as people do not think, but live according to prescribed templates, they are easy to control, like a flock. That's why it's to the government advantage to keep everyone in ignorance. The powers of evil do not sleep, either. This should never be forgotten.
Dear Master, is it true that inside a person there is also heaven and hell?
Myla boldly addressed the Keeper of Knowledge.
You mentioned that in the external world, there is an ashram where there are more elevated emotions, and there is a world where there is chaos, war, and destruction, where there are more negative emotions and suffering. But if a person cultivating elevated states finds themselves in such a negative atmosphere, still, won't it all depend on their inner state?
An interesting question, Mila,
pronounced the Keeper of Knowledge, meditatively intertwining his beautiful fingers into a mudra.
Of course, everything stems from our inner state. A person can be in an ashram but still cultivate negative emotions. Or they may accidentally find themselves in a war and use that situation for their development. Perceive it as a test from God. But here, we should also talk about the powers of destruction and creation. When they capture certain territories, their influence spreads there. For example, Russia is currently under the influence of the power of destruction.
The sage said, furrowing his brows.
Yes, madness is growing stronger,
remarked Erast.
Some sort of Stalinist ideology is returning. Screws are tightening, the internet is being shut off. They're doing everything to dumb down people and make them easy to control, like robots.
And in schools, they implant all sorts of stupid propaganda, programs to impose false ideals on children,
Olivia exclaimed angrily.
And they brainwash adults through television. Is this what you mean by the powers of destruction, dear master?
Yes,
replied the Keeper of Knowledge.
These powers of destruction have now gone on the offensive. All we can do is see where the powers of creation are most active and strive to go there with all our might, towards God and elevated emotions.
Wise Master,
A handsome youngster with curly red beard rose from the back bench. He often attended the great master's classes, but rarely spoke up. However, this topic struck a chord deep within him.
I'm listening to you, Greg. I'm very glad you decided to ask a question.
The keeper warmly said, directing the disciple with the energy of confidence and wisdom.
I wanted to ask about the subtle plane.
The young man spoke hesitantly.
You mentioned that the subtle plane is divided into several levels. Does it mean that even here, on Earth, depending on our state, depending on the atmosphere we find ourselves in, we can also be at different levels of the subtle plane?
Yes, of course.
The master replied.
All our thoughts, emotions, feelings, energy within us, these are all part of the subtle plane. After all, we don't just live with our physical bodies. We have a mind, emotions, sensations. We have our attention, which comes from very high spheres. That's why we exist simultaneously on subtle and physical levels. Often we don't even realize it. We don't understand where a particular thought came from, which demon it arose from, what emotional state it caused. This leads to spiritual blindness towards what is happening on a subtle level.
Master, am I right in understanding that because of this blindness, the higher world is invisible to us?
Margot asked.
Absolutely correct. People simply don't want to think, to delve into things. So they only see the physical world and don't even believe in the invisible world.
Great Master,
Edgar addressed the Keeper of Knowledge again.
Do people need more than just attending classes, making sacrifices, etc.? Do they need to understand why they are doing it? You mentioned that the most important thing is to transmit a state to people. But for people with a logical mindset, it's difficult to convey a state. How can a person do it right so that it's beneficial, so that they don't just perform actions thoughtlessly, but really understand their purpose?
It's good that you're interested in this.
The sage smiled.
It's very important for people to realize the importance of the spiritual knowledge that you carry. After all, you need to give not just thoughts, but spiritual insight. There's a story about a blind, wealthy man. He owned a vast wealth, spent it on beautiful clothes he couldn't see himself, but others admired. He bought huge houses, yachts, and cars. Once a very famous doctor came to town and offered to restore the rich man's sight. But it cost a fortune.
At this point, the keeper paused and smiled mischievously, inviting the disciples to think about what happened next.
Dear Master, tell us, did the blind man make the right choice and regain his sight in exchange for his wealth?
A girl in a dark blue silk suit asked with hope in her voice. Her deep brown eyes were staring from under long lashes with genuine interest.
No, Elena. Unfortunately, this story has a sad ending,
the sage replied.
Alas, people are more eager to deal with their external appearance than their inner state. They throw money to the wind, spend it on all sorts of nonsense, and remain empty and rotten inside. Only a few invest in education and development, and they are the ones who achieve real success in life.
Master, but it's important to pay attention to the kind of education one is investing in,
Rieslin said thoughtfully.
In just half an hour, you've given us more knowledge than I received in 4 years at university.
Thank you for this knowledge, Master,
Margot added, smiling radiantly.
If it were not for you, there would have been no growth in my life either. Although I have 2 higher education degrees and have graduated from school with honors, I knew nothing about life at all. I was constantly tormented, suffering, stepping on the same rakes until I met you and understood why it was happening.
The Keeper of Knowledge lovingly nodded to the disciples, directing to them his energy of wisdom, understanding, and prosperity.
Master, why did the blind rich man act like that? I just don't understand him at all. He could have regained his health, but instead, he spent on cars and clothes, even though he couldn't see them. Why did he do that?
Alina asked in bewilderment.
Some people just get used to being blind and deaf. They get used to not believing in the subtle plane and living only by the values dictated to them. And they don't even want to think with their own heads. Waking up such people from their sleep is very difficult. After all, a person must first want to wake up. We can only help them a little with this. But the first steps towards wisdom and understanding they must take themselves. Unfortunately, we can't help all people on Earth.
As soon as the Keeper of Knowledge finished speaking, several more hands shot up. With a gesture, the sage pointed to the tattooed man in the front row. He looked quite intimidating. His muscular, dry arms were covered with black symbols in an unknown language. There were even a few tattoos on his face, but wisdom and tranquility could be seen in his eyes. It was evident that this man had long ago embarked on the path of development and righteousness.
Great Master, tell me, am I correct in understanding that the essence of the law of sacrifice is that a person goes through a reassessment of values? The question is not about money, but about where a person invests this energy. Money is his energy. When we discussed darshan about sacrifice, we concluded that those who live in the ashram at some point preferred the spiritual over the material, rejected everything they had. And at that moment, something clicked. What's the use of being blind but lying in a golden bathtub? Remember, one disciple wrote that she's saving up for a bathtub and she needs $30,000, so she can't go to the seminar. She doesn't have the money. So, is the reassessment of values the essence of the law of sacrifice? You sacrifice and your values change, is that so?
Correct, Pablo. It all depends on where you direct your energy. Money is material energy, and attention is subtle energy. Where we direct these energies, that's what we start to receive. Invested our savings in wisdom and development, got growth. Invested in a golden bathtub, received negative energies of greed, avarice, and vanity. All our efforts should be directed towards something spiritual, light, elevated, in order to receive the same elevated in return.
Master, you were just talking to us about the powers of creation and destruction. Am I right in understanding that the Creator encompasses both of these powers?
Greg asked with visible interest.
You understand everything correctly?
Smiled the Keeper of Knowledge. He was pleased that his disciples perceived the truth so deeply.
Often people think that the powers of creation, that is, goodness, are God. And the aspiration towards God is an aspiration towards goodness. But the essence is much deeper and more complex. God is beyond our perception, so our earthly concepts of creation and destruction, he encompasses within himself.
Dear Master, it turns out that God transcends everything we can imagine and describe. Is he the absolute? Did I understand your thought correctly?
Mila asked, peering into the sage's eyes with undisguised interest.
Yes, in shamanism, for example, there is the god of eternity, Tengri. He is the absolute. He created the world, created Erlik, the god of the past, who destroys everything. He created Ulgun, the god of the future, who creates everything. He created Umai, the goddess of the present. Tengri created all of this, and he created our world as a game in which God plays. Ulgun will create everything, Umai will preserve everything, and Erlik will destroy everything. If it weren't for these powers, there would be no game.
Keeper, I don't quite understand.
Alina turned to the sage in amazement.
If Tengri created the world as a game, why didn't he create only good on Earth, only the powers of creation? It would have been much simpler.
The sage smiled gently in response to the puzzled disciple and replied thoughtfully.
Imagine if the higher powers only created and created, but there was no destruction, then the game simply wouldn't have started. And if everything was only destroyed, then what would be created then? God created this whole and wise game, so that everything in it had some deep meaning. After all, the task of the game is the development of man. The game goes on, and we develop. We improve. In this lies the meaning laid down by the Creator. And creation and destruction are just powers that act in this world. and seeing these powers, interacting with them, we begin to gain understanding. And understanding is precisely what we need. It's what will help us grow spiritually and come to elevated energies.
Thank you, Master. Now I finally understand what is the game of God.
Alina smiled.
Master, can I ask another question about this game?
Greg stood up and asked. The Keeper of Knowledge nodded approvingly.
Engaging in spiritual practices, I observed myself and noticed that if we identify with something, we start to fully engage in the rules of the game. Inside the game, the law of destruction comes into play. Am I right in understanding that in this big game, there are also small rules that regulate whether to take something away from a person or not?
Gregory, in any case, if something is given by higher powers, sooner or later it will still be taken away. That's why it's very important to draw the right conclusions from all life situations. We think, I have something. Something was given to me. But then it will be taken away. And what conclusion should I draw from this? That everything is impermanent? One should not be attached to anything. One must strive to be detached, strive for spiritual growth, be conscious, acquire those treasures that cannot be taken away.
Dear Master, does it mean that there are still values that cannot be taken away from a person?
Olivia clarified.
Yes, of course. For example, awareness. If we acquire awareness, then it cannot be taken away from us. Or if we acquire a tendency towards elevated emotions, that's ours forever. That's why Christ says, accumulate treasures in heaven that no one can take away, that will not rust, will not spoil. But if you collect earthly treasures, then as you receive them, you will part with them later.
Master, tell me, will our reactions stay with us? After all, we still must strive for the powers of creation, goodness and light. But our perception depends on our reaction. If we reacted angrily to some bad situation, it became negative. If we reacted calmly, it didn't affect us at all. Our reaction creates a tendency and leads us, right?
Pablo asked.
Yes, of course, all our tendencies. How to react, what to say, what to strive for, what to do. All of these remain with us and passes from life to life. Being in the game of God, we must carefully monitor our reactions so as not to carry anything negative into another life. Any tendencies towards ugliness, stupidity, cruelty. That's why we must strive for constant creation. Ask ourselves the right questions more often. What am I doing? Are my reactions benefiting me or harming me? If our tendencies lead to development, creation, then we are evolving, releasing the God within us, understanding the essence of the game, and can exit from it.
The sage fell mysteriously silent, directing his spiritual gaze into the distance, beyond the backs of the disciples, where the brightly orange sunset stretched across the sky. The disciples followed his example, and all of them turned back at once. How indescribably beautiful was the world created by the Almighty. Every star in the sky, every blade of grass and every twig, everything held some mystery within it, which seemed impossible to unravel. But the disciples knew exactly where to seek answers to all the questions of the universe. Even in silence, the great Keeper of Knowledge continued to share knowledge with his disciples. Between them, an invisible channel was established through which the sage continuously transmitted the elevated energy of creation, goodness, and acceptance. The disciples felt it like a warm sunlight. Only it didn't affect the body, but penetrated deep into the soul, making it tremble with the elevated sensation of power and understanding.
Do you want to know more? Watch the animated masterpiece that reveals the mysteries of humanity. Discover more sacred knowledge in books. You can meet the main characters of books at our seminars. Find your amulet of power. Participate in an individual ritual. Open free channel with daily spiritual practices for yourself. All these you will find on our website www.amazon1.org. Share this book and spread the great knowledge. Then people's lives will change for the better, and you will accumulate good karma and be able to help all your loved ones.